Welcome, everyone, to our board meeting. We'll call the meeting to order, and looks like we have Roy, myself, and Gina here. And I think Kevin's out of town. Is Aaron?
He had to work.
She's
okay.
Planned to be here.
Okay. But we have enough to begin, so we'll open this closed session with public comment before we go into closed session. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board for up to 3 minutes for anything not on the agenda?
Closed session agenda.
Hmm?
Closed session agenda only.
That's right. Public. Okay, absent that, we will go ahead and move into our closed session and return at 5 into open session. Thank you.
Hey, welcome everyone. Thank you for being here. So glad to see all our teachers and 10-year veterans here. It's one of the best things in my life. I appreciate all of them being here. With that, we will go ahead and call the meeting to order. The report out of closed session is there was no action taken. So we'll go ahead and begin with the pledge. So let's see, we have the flag here and probably on the screen. Salute, pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
Jean Foreman.
Here.
Roy Brock.
Here.
Aaron McCoy.
Here.
Kevin Brandon. And Jean Cagnon.
Here.
Okay, is there anyone from the public that would like to address the board? We're up to 3 minutes on anything that is not on the agenda. Now we will move then to communications and the thought of the day. And for the thought today, I wanted to share with you, we, as you may know, started a Spirit of 1776 is our theme for the year. And about a year, a little over a year ago, I met a gentleman. He's really quite gifted. And I engaged him to do a sculpture. And this work of art is due to be finished, the first one, in February. And so I wanted you to be aware of this. And on the screen here, we'll go ahead and just take a moment to read this with you. Did you know that John Adams did not expect any lasting monuments in his name? Now, a lot of people may not know that. And this is the quote. It says that he wrote this to Benjamin Rush. Mausoleum statues, monuments will never be erected to me. Panegyrical romances will never be written, nor flattering orations spoken to transmit me to posterity in brilliant colors. Can you imagine that one of the central figures in the fight for freedom and independence, which was foundation to our liberty, died believing that this legacy of great action would never be recognized or honored, and by those who came after him. With all of his contributions, so I'm going to move a little closer because my eyes are straining. Older eyes. With all his contributions and that of his beloved Abigail and dutiful son, John Quincy, we see no shrines, little recognition, and even worse, no real contemplation of what a family of servant leaders can do positively to affect others. Few of you may not realize that John Adams exists to honor partially the legacy of this powerful family and the role they played in securing American independence. Linda and I were intentional in naming it after him and the virtues he represented. They were a family, a first family. Washington was married, sure, but they weren't blessed with all the children the Adams were. And they actually sent John overseas for a significant period of time, leaving Abigail to raise the children. And they did this in the spirit of public virtue. And the epiphany of thought that came to me at the moment or at that time was that there would be actually a monument and it would be a school because of how important education was to this family. So let's go ahead and play that short segment if you would. Thank you. So I don't know if you knew this, but there's actually been, a bill that is before Congress right now for John Adams, a monument to be done by the White House. And I want you to, there's another short clip regarding that. And I just think it's kind of interesting how providential that hiring this sculpture or sculptor to do the sculpture and things that are happening, others have seen what maybe we've known for a long time. So go ahead. This is just giving you an idea. We did give out a mock cap, which is a smaller version of this, to the Servant Leader of the Year last year. We'll also be doing this mock cap, or we're going to present that in March, on March the 20th, at a dinner, and it will, an announcement will be coming out, and it will be given to Kevin Kiley to honor his service as Servant Leader of the Year. But the actual statues, which are 1 1/4 size of life size, will begin first on the Roseville campus in February, followed by the other two campuses. As part of this, we are using the campaign to raise the money below, which is different donation amounts. And honestly, if the scholars gave $17.76, which is not a lot of money, it would more than cover the cost of them. The foundation is going to pay for this, but these donations will help the foundation to offset the costs of doing this. And there's also the opportunity, which I think is one of the better ones, to have family names at that memorial where we have the Adams statue, so that families and the scholars can be remembered and go back in the future to see how they left a mark with John Adams Academy. So that's my thought for the day. I wanted you to be aware of that and see what a beautiful thing it is. And when you see this amazing sculptor and what he's done, I think it will take your breath away. I don't know if you can zero in, but if you go to that statue and just, can you make it big enough at all? You'll notice he went so far, as you can see, even his wedding ring on his left hand. And you can see the scroll in his hand, it reads, you know, in Congress. And so he put some real detail on this to suggest why what he did. And his big part was not only on that committee where he wanted Jefferson to write it, but he actually stood up for it and fought for every word, even the words, especially, I should say, the words to eliminate slavery, which South Carolina and Georgia would not agree with at the time. But it, you know, he stood up on July the 2nd and got them to all agree on what we, which is an amazing document. It's our birthright, it's our birth certificate, and all the countries of the world, many of them, over 100 of them today, use that document to declare their own independence. So anyway, hope that you will get this information out. Next is really something I've looked forward to long ago, and that's recognition of those who've been with us for 10 years. So we have some really unique things to recognize, not only each one of you that have given 10 years to the Academy, but also to remember what, how important it was to not only the scholars that have been here, but also for a recognition of your colleagues and of the families that are here. So Dr. Hankey will mention your name, and if you'd come up, it's kind of like graduation. You get to get your certificate, but also there's this shadow box, which has you the information, the certificate, and an American flag and so forth in. I think it's actually quite meaningful. I think it's tasteful, and I think you'll appreciate it. Go ahead. Carlos Iniguez, I guess. That's Carolyn or Jeremy? Carolyn. After me, too. All didn't know you're going to get to graduate.
Heather McCarthy.
She had an emergency, so she's not here tonight. Yeah. So
okay.
I'll see.
I will switch you.
Very good, Tim.
Yes.
Jennifer Wilson. Very handsome. Andrew Lambert. Martin O'Hara. Very soon. Next person will join us online, Megan Mianjad.
Looking at virtual with her.
Thank you.
Nina Hoot.
Let's see for a kid on speakers or not. She's just a
you want a picture with
her?
Good.
No, no,
no. He comes, well.
Okay.
That's
the Michael Ball.
Yes.
Miles Matthews. Norman Gonzalez. Peter Saban. Ronald Tirado. Saw Ron this morning. Wait. Sherry Hebert.
Bobby here.
Yeah, that was Tammy Nutner, Tammy Mendoza. See the camera. She's very nice. Anyway, thank you all. Now there's so many stories that go into each of you. But probably the greatest legacy that you leave behind of teaching is one that gives forever. That's why it's arguably the most noble profession. So thank you for giving that gift of giving forever, which so many will benefit from forever. Thank you again. We have the ESO update, which each of us had a copy of what's happening. Please, yes, if you need to go, don't feel bad about that. I may have to some of you prepare lessons for tomorrow and things. You sure that's going to be safe there?
Probably safer there than over here by me.
Oh. Right. Any questions from the board regarding the PSO update that you received? Next is the facilities update. And you later in the agenda, we'll be talking about a facilities plan. But I don't know that there's a lot of update, although I will ask ask you to just look, there are a couple things that are going on right now, specifically out in El Dorado Hills, for example. They're putting in a fence and gate and some other things that were sorely needed. So anyway, those are just updates to let you know. Next is the leadership update, which in that update, there was a strategic planning accountability report, which is really important to what we're doing. So I didn't know, Dr. Hankey, are you going to be covering that?
Yes. First of all, since our last meeting, I want to publicly announce we have been accepted full accreditation with Cognia, American Academy Lyceum. And I want to thank Bree Gordon for being the steering master of that, and all of the principals were involved with teacher observations and input, and it was a big deal. And so we were fully credited with Cognia now. Part of my leadership report is attendance recovery automated infant study. All schools are engaged in automatic infant study. Earlier today, I send you a campus safety focus group report. I didn't put that in the board packet because we don't want it to be public knowledge of where some weaknesses might be, but we'll be addressing. So that report will be given to the board in the next, in just a couple weeks here. All right. We have strategic plan update.
You got that keyboard?
Oh, I didn't do it. Okay. Did I just hit the down arrow?
I think it's the sideways.
Right arrow. The right arrow, okay. Hey, awesome. All right, strategic plan. This is the strategic plan that we worked with the board on last year, all the principals and the board. It's split up into really three areas: academics, business, culture, and plus a focus this year on volunteerism. We're going to break this up. So academics, our goals were to improve our metrics, including task force, to execute the ACL model with fidelity, to hire the best teachers with initial focus on hiring aspiring math science mentors. We have teacher development, the art of mentoring, and strong collaborative teacher learning teams. We'll be going over some charts in just a minute on campus and whatnot, but we're in process of creating an American classical leadership education evaluation tool. As far as hiring the best teachers, some of the things that have happened, board approved a 5% salary. It says they're a bonus. It really isn't a bonus. It is actually an incentive for math, science, arts, other hard to find teaching positions. It allows our principals to recruit and also keep sort of best faculty that we have. That's one of the things that we did for that. I know every principal is working. Each of them have their own strategy and plan to make sure that we improve our math and science departments. And we've seen that big pushes, big moves at several of our campuses. Part also of the executing ACL model and teacher development, all of the administrators work together to develop a teacher evaluation tool, which falls in line with our ACL model, as well as other standards of professionalism. We also have an administrator evaluation tool. There are common tools that we're using across campuses now, so we can get consistency and quality with our faculty. Any questions on these things? All right, I'm going to jump here to our CAS scores. What I'm going to compare is just the overalls at this point. We can line up deeper dives into data later if you'd like to do that. We're looking at 23-24 and then the 24-25. We saw some major jumps. This first slides are Eldorado Hills. You'll notice in both our English, math, at both the elementary and secondary levels, we saw marked improvement in all scores. You can see a jump there in our elementary from 58 up to 61, from 42 up to 53% in math. In our secondary, went from 60% proficient up to 80%, over 80%, and in math from 42 up to 53. Our administrators did a remarkable job in really leading teacher teams and really implementing a lot of strategic, implementation. We see that science. You'll see notice a little drop in both, which is our new watch and area of focus. And I know they've got plans this year for that. So anyway, that's what we've got for Eldorado Hills. Next slide. Next is Lincoln. You'll notice the big improvement there, both elementary and secondary saw gains in science. We saw a little drop in both ELA math in elementary and a significant gain in our ELA math in the secondary program. Roseville, the elementary, the gain was in math. You'll notice there was a drop in science and ELA. The secondary saw growth in both English, math, and science. I would like to add, these tests were all given about the same time we were creating our strategic plan. So our administrators worked hard together to implement new plans for this year, which we won't really see the results of until they take the CAS in a couple months. The online program, we basically have baseline scores for end of year last year. We don't have the previous year because those scholars, the results are intermixed into the in-person. So it's from 2 years ago to now, all we have right now is baseline scores that we'll be able to judge them by at the end of this year. Any questions on academic?
Yeah, I have a question. What do you think is the one thing that we could do in elementary to increase the scores?
And can I give you two things?
Sure.
Kids have got to read. They need to read.
Okay.
Inspiring classics and other works. That's one thing. And it's you know, I recently read the Orville Wilbur Wright biography by David McCulloch recently, and I love the American experience of the Europeans had a lot of theories about flight. Orville Wilbur Wright knew that it was just seat in the plane, in the air, marking the minutes. And within the first week, they had more airtime than the experts in Europe had in years. It's kids need to read. It's not, you know, so that's number one. Number two is writing. This is research. There's no holes in it that when kids write, their test scores improve. And I do think we have to be strategic. That's what I saw Zita leading her team last year. They were very strategic on the kind of writing that was necessary to improve score. That's why I believe we saw some dramatic results over there. They need to write. Just writing across the board, it's actually, research shows it's writing nonfiction. And then you can actually tweak what they're writing to you know, really game the system for iReady, or excuse me, for CAS. But they need to write. If I would add the third thing, it's teachers working together as a team to capture scholar work, evaluate it, and then go back with a plan to the classroom and implement it. Bring back the work, evaluate it, go back to the class. We need our teacher teams working in concert to look at actual data, implement a plan, and that's where those three things.
So some of this data was old, like you said. So what would be the soonest that we would have this year's information to contrast after our, you know, strategic plan?
So it's for CAS, we won't have that till summer. Right. That's the next. We also are testing iReady, which is internal diagnostics, and NAP. We completed the second window, so we can look at growth there for elementary. Secondary start their mid-year window in about 2 weeks, and then we can look at beginning of school mid-year windows, and that gives us some idea.
So when can we as a board see that information?
I believe we've got it done. We've got the data, so we can submit that next quarter.
Okay. That'd be good. And then maybe the CAS in the summer, late summer, whenever that is, if we could, when would that be? August board meeting, July board meeting, September board meeting?
We get raw data in the summer, but it's not official CAS data. And we don't usually get that till when around October. So I mean, it's quite a bit late, and to make publicly released data, but we get raw data usually by August, okay. September, so we have an idea of what we
can. So could we tentatively say doing one of these reports maybe in September then?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, culture. The board, plan, strategic plan, retain teachers, retain scholars. I'll show you some data in a minute that shows where we're at. Attendance, improve attendance, and onboarding, communication improvements, and dress code for teachers, also adding a blazer for high school scholars. Where we're at with that so far, I'll hit a few things here. Some of the things, by the way, I'm only hitting a few things, but some of the things we've done to improve the onboarding and family discussions is board approved an annual affirmation of signatures where scholars pledge and affirm they will live by our 10 core values with specific policy, including dress code, technology, et cetera. All of our principals implemented that this year. And moving forward, every year, every scholar will sign an affirmation statement. Parents will also affirm in the registration process, reaffirm that they'll uphold and support these. We move on to communication. One of the major things for communication this year is we just completed a new website for the school. It has a homepage that is for the full John Adams Academies. Each site has their own site pages. They're clean, they're crisp. I've been getting favorable input. It's being updated and changed weekly as at both the principal site level and at the main level. But I think it's going to be a very powerful communication tool. It's one implementation of several we hope to see. As far as the dress code for teachers, we clarified our employee dress code. We actually strengthened it, put it in the handbook. All of our principals met with their staff at the beginning of the year. I've seen marked improvement in just dress standards across the board. Also, to help us do that, the board approved a dress stipend for academic staff. We have uniforms for some of our classified positions, and we're asking our secondary male teachers to wear a blazer and or tie if they're teaching secondary. Other things we've done, we're in process. So here is a scholar attendance. 100% all of our academies that so far has seen an improvement in attendance, and you've got the rates there. So those on the left side, those are end of year attendance rates for all programs. On the right is as of December, that's where we're at. And there's been significant growth and progress. I know all of our principals have goals and strategies that are going into this improvement. Teacher retention. We also have seen huge, just a stark difference here. So numbers on the left were retention at the end of this school year. Mostly got a lot of, 60s, 70s on that left side. As of end of December, this is what we're looking at for every campus so far. We've got even got about three 100%. All the schools are in the 90% retention so far. I will say what we'll probably see the hit is in the summer break. And in our other annual accountability, school accountability report, we're going to clock from census day to census day, which is basically the first week of October to the first week of October, because we want to be able to capture anyone that leaves during the summer so we can see how many did we keep. One thing we are seeing is scholar enrollment. We've had some surprises this year, so we're working hard. You'll see that two programs have made a huge leap forward. One is EDH Secondary, the other is our online. Just huge growth, and we have, anyway, applaud efforts. There are a couple campuses that were still filling out and growing, and they're on our watch. We've got our EDH Elementary and Lincoln Secondary, which we're looking at. All the other programs maintained pretty much, where they were at last year. I think that finishes the culture piece. Any questions? All right, strategic plan, the business section. Goal was financial improvements, real-time access to budget, and accurate monthly annual reporting. I want to thank and applaud Academica. I believe we've conquered the monthly, accurate monthly reporting. Principals are getting their monthly reports, and I know the whole finance team has worked hard to make sure they're as accurate as possible, and we can't thank them enough that we can make decisions in confidence knowing where we're at. We're still working on real-time access. We have good access right now. We're working on real-time access as we go in days ahead. Annual increase net assets. There's been improvement all sites, but as you saw in the budget report in November, we're major improvement, but meeting that 3% is not going to happen, and probably at least two of our campuses. But we've made major improvements at all site and budget. Empowering site administrators and teachers. Part of the whole business strategy is to give principals more decision making for hiring, purchasing. When we evaluated our purchasing process, there was on average about five or six approvals that needed to happen. That's been dropped down to two or three at max. I mean, we cut down that process significantly. We've also increased the amounts that principals can purchase right away, and so that's also sped the process up quite a bit. And there's other things we've done as well, but I would say our business, we've made major improvements, and we're still looking to continue making those improvements moving forward. Questions on business?
No, I appreciate the report. And I don't know what the board thinks, but I was wondering when would be a reasonable time to visit these things and the improvement process.
Let's do it as an end of year wrap-up. Okay. Or let's do it in, we won't have the budgets finalized until really June. So when we come back for school, it would be a good time to report on this full year.
Okay.
So it'd be that I'm going to say August.
Okay.
I'm hoping we don't do a board meeting in July.
Okay.
I'm putting it out there.
I didn't hear any objections. I guess you're
good. Yeah, so August we can report on the 25-26 school year.
All right. Thank you. Any other slides that you wanted to share?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Great. Financial update. Right. Thank you for being here.
Good evening. How is everyone?
Good.
So for the month of December, revenue was at $30 million. Expenses was at $33 million. Sites are at between 48 and 50% spend rate. We want to be around 50% right now. ANS is at 43%, so they're low with their expenses. And overall, we are at 49%. Do you have any questions for me for them?
No, I think it's good to mention again that we have inconsistent timing in terms of how we get our revenues. And so because we don't get, you can't say, well, you had $60 million in revenues last year, so you get like $5 million a month, right? No, we don't. Some months we get just a few million, other times we get multiples of that. And so when we're looking at this monthly, you need to know that there's going to be that imbalance. The only way you'll get the balance for the year is to look at it as a fiscal year at the end of June. But I just wanted to mention that to everyone. So, but for example, those increases in attendance will actually start to make a meaningful difference
As soon as what, March?
March, yeah. Increased, so Eldorado Hills was an increase at 1.7 for the P1 reporting.
Million.
1.7%, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, since compared to P1 of last year. So,
okay.
Yeah, which is good, really good. It's usually around 1%. And then Lincoln was 1.08%. So, yeah. We'll start seeing that once the state certifies February 18th. So we expect it in March.
I have a question under campus highlight. It says academic services expenses include instructional aids to be allocated to sites. I was curious about this. Do you know, and maybe it's a question for someone else, how many aids to each site and when?
Oh, I don't know the answer to that, but usually what we do, it's the special ed instructional aides, they get allocated EOP. I'll look into that and I can get back to you on that. But yeah, it's basically it starts at academic services because that's where the instructional aides sit. So I believe it's the SPET, and then we split it out a third to each site. So. Yeah, you're welcome. That's all I have tonight.
All right.
Thank you.
Next is board announcements. I did have an announcement that I made last time, but we begin our meetings with a closed session, and I announced that we have a new trustee, and she's seated to my right, your left. Her name is Jean Pagnone. And we want to welcome her. She's had some scholars there for years and has one that's even, I think, due to graduate this spring. But she comes to us with a rich understanding of public school finance, as well as maybe some of the things that aren't so glamorous about public schools at times. Just the difficulties that we have to encounter day to day, but she's really good at it. She has her own business. She trains individuals in firearms training and related matters. So she has what I would call a lot of practical, ideal experience with just being a good thinker. And we're pleased that she's here with us, and we're also pleased that her husband would let her serve with us. He's a good man. He's an emergency room doctor over at Kaiser, and he does a good job. I got to meet him a little bit more recently when we were at an event. But anyway, I want to really thank her for accepting this role and position. I would encourage all of you to get to know her a little bit better. She also has a background. I don't want to, you know, speak for you, but do you want to just take a minute?
What was my background?
Well.
That I can't say no, and I volunteer for everything.
Well, let me give you just a little bit more. She wants to know, so I'll tell her.
Let us know if this is correct.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
She was born and raised in Sacramento and married Louie. And they've been here for 20 years. Their daughter, Eva, is a graduate of John Adams Academy. And their son, Luke, is a senior, as I mentioned. As she grew up, Jean's father would take her to the library most every Saturday, where she would check out a stack of books. Her journey as a lifelong scholar began in that library with the first book she read and the subsequent ones she devoured. Those books and the many discussions she shared with her father, who is also an avid reader, instilled in her great love of history and shaped her views on faith, family, and freedom. It should be noted that service to country is important, as her lineage traces back to history of men serving in the United States Army. At 18, she left home for college, where she began her studies as a biology major with the intent of becoming a doctor. Unfortunately, her aversion to blood and bad smells caused her to abandon that idea. And she instead pursued a degree in the subject she loved, and that's history.
Blood and bad smells. Did you have any children?
I did.
For more than 10 years, she's been well respected as a business owner and firearms instructor. Her time in Placer County has given her the privilege of being a tireless volunteer for causes close to her heart. She serves as an elected board member also of the South Placer RWF. And she has served her community as well on the Taxpayers Association on the West Placer MAC. And she's also currently a trustee of the Dry Creek District. Is that correct?
Yes.
And she'll be serving in both capacities till the end of this year. You'll also find her occasional opinion as a contributor to the California Globe and a local speaker addressing groups on education issues, the importance of being involved in elections, and what we can do to protect and preserve our constitutional values. So maybe we should just give her a warm welcome. So you asked.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Linda.
Because you knew I was going to say that. What do I say? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a real privilege.
Good. With that, we will go ahead and move to the consent agenda unless there's other announcements. Any announcements? Okay. I'd like to pull one item, which is the minutes from the item E, the first regular meeting, December 11th. And let me tell you why I wanted to pull that information. You may recall at the last board meeting, at the board's courtesy and discretion, two members of the public were allowed to provide comment outside of the regular public comment period due to traffic delays that were expressed. Eldorado Hills parents Doyle and Sarah Renner addressed the board regarding accommodations requests for their daughter. Mrs. Renner exhausted her allocated public comment time and continued to argue beyond the permitted time. Chairman Foreman determined the comments to be out of order and disruptive and concluded the public comment period. So I wanted the minutes to reflect those details. Right now, it just said that they spoke, basically. So I wanted to ask the board to consider, and if you like, I can go through that, but that's the statement that I would like to make sure that the record reflects that in the minutes.
So you want to approve the minutes with that change?
Yes.
I'll make a I'm blanking out here. I'll make a motion that we approve the consent agenda with a change to the minutes as specified, as read. And then you'll provide that language to
yes
somebody so they can make that change?
Yep.
Second the motions.
Yeah, a motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. That carried 4-0. Next, we'll move to discussion and action items. A, discussion and possible approval of summer project list and 5-year facilities plan.
We have a hand up back here.
Yes.
On the consent agenda, I have H. For the approval of overnight field trip, PAC in Westmont. Yes, I had a question from our admin team. As far as this field trip is concerned, we do this field trip every year. Is there a way to get a blanket approval going forward, or do we need to continue to bring it to the board every year?
I'd probably ask Troy, but you know, defer to him a little bit. But I will say this: the only reason maybe to bring it back, and the reason that we do field trips and have approval processes, is in every field trip there should be an expectation in terms of behavior. And I want to make sure that we're checking all those boxes with regards to that. I realize, you know, in terms of sending them to TAC, I'm thrilled they're going there because it's a great college, and I've been there a few times. But I want to make sure that whether it's with regards to the performing arts or the Latin or anything that we're, whenever we as an institution have these field trips, I think it's good to have a discussion with the scholars and remember that it's a privilege. And when we go, that we want to make sure that we have proper decorum and what's expected. That way, when they may violate those things, it's not a surprise to them that maybe they're sent home or that it doesn't impact the others. So that's the idea behind it, at least from a board perspective. It's safety and also decorum and following those things. But
I recommend it come every year. It's our policy said there's only a few kinds of field trips that need board approval. This is one of them because it's overnight. And things change, staffing changes, situations change, destinations might change. I think it's good to get an annual check-in. I will say, because successful field trips pass, we can move it, if the board feels appropriate, out of the discussion into just consent and make it quick. And that's what happened this time because of the great experiences that you've been providing scholars last year. So,
thank you. All right, so we'll move then to discussion and action agenda item A, discussion of possible approval of the summer project list. The information was in there. Sam Haggard is not here tonight. He's ill. Were you going to fill in for him? Is that why I see you nodding your head?
Yeah, I was going to say he is sick. I can take notes. Both the summer project list is in there and the five-year facilities plan. I don't think the summer project list was expected to be approved tonight as much as a starting point for discussion, since there's still the budget that will help determine the affordability for planned projects over the summer. But the five-year plan is up for approval. If that's something the board wants to do, I can take notes for Sam, or if you wanted to carry it over to next month to have Sam discuss or answer any questions that you may have.
So I have a question to the principals, and that is, have they reviewed that and do they feel that this reflects what the most urgent needs are on their campus, or do they want to spend a little more time thinking about that or looking at it and seeing if those are indeed the right things, and if they're in the right sequence? Sometimes you can't do everything, but so you have to sequence them. And so do you want a little more time, or are you comfortable with it? You want more time? Okay. So why don't we bring this back next time, and that'll give them time to look at what Sam is proposing, and so that they can make sure it's congruent with what they're thinking is important. All right, thank you. Did the board have any questions or comments about that? Next item B, discussion of 24-25 single audit. We had an audit we received last month, and Nakam is here to talk about that. Thank you.
Evening, thank you for having me. So the board approved the audit last month in draft form, which is how many auditors do it. We're not looking for approval tonight, but we did want to make sure it was in your records, and also I don't know how much it was discussed last month or anything here, but I wanted to go a little bit over the material weakness that was given on the financial reporting. That's why I'm here this week, not just the board meeting, extended the chair for the board meeting, but we've been here till whatever time each night, and we are now reconciled through the month of December, and that will be continuing on through the end of the year. And if we find anything through these reconciliations, because we found out over the last month that reconciliations did not happen in the past, except for cash. So there might be items that like an AR, AP that we may need to adjust, and we'll take those into this fiscal year and discuss those with the auditors, whether or not they want to do not restatements, but prior period adjustments, which is basically just a few lines of the audit saying, this is what we're attributing to prior years. It's not a big deal. I don't think we're going to get material enough to get there, which is why right now we're just both numb. When we get to a material number, we'll be involving the auditors, and we're actually going to meet with auditors since I've never met with the partner. I've met with the manager below. We're going to set up a meeting with them to go over what to expect with the, I have to remember what year we're in, 25-26 audit, because I know we can do better. So we'll have that fixed, and there'll be no vote calls to the board going forward, except for, wow, this has been amazing, the turnaround. And I do take kudos, so you can send it out in the future. Anyway, that's all I had, if anyone has any questions for me.
Well, I did want to say thank you. And I know it's a little bit embarrassing to say, you know, here's this and here's this that we're finding, but what I liked about what we did in bringing academic in is we've in essence had another audit as to what's been going well and things that we needed to change. And that's what has been happening. And I think it's been needed. And I thank you for doing that, because it elevates our confidence in the finances. And let's face it, that's part of the ABCs that we just went through, which is our academics and the business and the culture. And you have to have all three legs of the stool. So thank you for doing that. And yes, that is a compliment to you and the team for getting this resolved and done quickly, and also being able to get our principals real-time information that you said is going to be ready when?
We're working over the next month. We're actually bringing in a consultant. We just implemented Sage at our other schools. The consultant we use there, we're bringing in to John Adams to do some work here. Sage has been very underutilized in the past to make sure that we're using everything we can. So hopefully, I would say by the end of the year, everything perfect. I like under promise, over deliver. It's the same thing I said when I first started academic a few years ago when I started there, and there's some cleanup, and we had it done by March. So I'm hoping before the school year ends that these reports start coming over quickly. The reason we're here last night was we're actually developing a budget that can be uploaded into Sage. So now there'll be no more Excel board packages. It'll be basically a push a button and PDF from Sage with the budget. We may have to throw it in Excel just to put our comments on it. But other than that, it's going to be a lot of things that have happened in the past that have been done manually will start becoming automated through Sage. My goal is someday for AI to replace me. And thank you for allowing me to work with this school. It's part of my public virtue. I don't know, but I don't think a statue will be erected to me. My last job before county academic was I worked for Wyndham Timeshares. I get a lot more enjoyment and pride in my work doing accounting for schools than I did doing accounting for timeshares. And it's a little easier to talk at parties. I think timeshares and I have the same things for accounts. So like, people that you just don't want to say you are. So, but thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Thank you much. So that was just a discussion item with regards to the audit.
It says to make a motion.
approved. We approved
that. That already happened. Well, Lane Church is like saying we have to approve 25 and 24 as if we didn't approve 24.
The audit is a 24-25 audit, and the
was that why it says 24?
There was a, it was originally thought to require board approval, but that was changed.
So this does not require us.
Because we already did it.
Yeah.
All right.
Next is the board policy on delegation of limited fiscal authority and internal controls.
In a nutshell, the board policy reaffirms the board holds ultimate fiduciary responsibility and authority over all financial matters, and the policy carefully delegates limited day-to-day operational responsibilities to the support service providers, Academic California LLC, while preserving robust board oversight through strict approval requirements, segregation of duties, and strong internal controls. So the key safeguards ensure that academics do not unitarily approve purchases, initiate and approve transactions, or exercise final authority over bank accounts, particularly investment and resource accounts, thereby protecting JA's financial integrity while enabling efficient operations under the active services.
So to give you an idea how that may work in practice is that Brooke has authority to sign, Troy has authority to sign, I have authority to sign, but nothing can be done without two or more. And the idea is to anything that needs to be approved has to go through the process of being approved. And then one of the signers and or really two have to be aware of what's going on. So there's controls in there. I don't know if you read through them, but if you have any questions, it's time to bring them up now.
I read the whole thing and I have no questions.
Okay. Not, do I have a motion?
I'll make the motion to approve the board policy on the delegation of limited fiscal authority and interim controls. Second the motion.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Passed 4-0. Next item is board policy on referral protocols for addressing scholar behavioral health concerns.
During the last legislative session, there was a new bill that passed that requires schools to pass a policy on this by January. So that's what you have before you. The issue is really addressing the needs of, and I'm going to use quotes from the bill, addressing the needs of high-risk groups, which include, there are five groups here listed. That section is a cut and paste from the law. We're told that we can add to this list, but we can't take away from this list. What we've done in our policy is because this is a policy that says these are our protocols for how we work with these high-risk groups. And you'll see there that we have a process of one, assessing needs, two, there's training. The training of portions in here are required by law that 100% of our certificate staff are trained by June of 2020. I want to say 2029. So anyway, we have here how we identify scholars that might fit in one of those groups, and then we have an implementing scholar support. And here you'll notice that we've taken a lot of care to make sure that our academy's 10 core values are honored. That we've got a balanced approach, prioritize proactive intervention, collaboration, accountability. It includes, and we made sure that guardians and parents are included, ongoing communication, collaboration, conferencing with the family, that we use a variety of means to support these scholars, and that the academy endeavors to pursue positive behavior intervention supports in lieu of discipline as appropriate, but then scholars who receive discipline action may also be offered positive behavioral intervention supports. Scholars will be held accountable for the behavior in line with the 10 core values. Accountability measures may include restorative practices, reflective interventions, disciplinary actions, reinforcement, responsibility, growth, and character development. We We used the state draft initially. It went through several different drafts, getting kind of moving outward. We did some edits. We opened it up to admin. We opened it up to counselors. We opened it up to other key staff. I want to thank, we had a couple counselors and psychologists really spend some time. I want to thank Stephanie Wolf. I know she's not here, but she really spent some time, and was an advocate to make sure we maintained 10 of our values and policy strategies. And I really appreciate her input and everyone that included. But this is the policy that we have for the board to meet the legal requirement.
Questions?
A question, Troy, and the part under identifying scholars. Are families made aware of the screening tools that are used, surveys, questionnaires, that it's listed? I'm not aware of any surveys or questionnaires I've ever seen from my family.
Yeah, well, that encompasses a lot of things. So for instance, some of the high-risk groups are maybe scholars that are homeless, scholars that are, so a lot of that has happened at registration, or as it becomes aware, you know, we'll look at, a lot of times it's declared they're homeless or foster care, et cetera. We don't have a tool that specifically tries to screen for these. We just have a variety of processes and, you know, at work, at play it all the time. We have IEP meetings, 504 meetings, counselor meetings, with scholars, and any one of those could trigger something that would make, you know, identify that scholar. And we just want to make sure they get the proper support that we can give them. I mean, the way our academy would like to give that. So, did I answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
The survey questionnaires, I just wondered if anything's distributed to all scholars.
I guess this policy says we could, but we're just saying that that's one of the things that may trigger identification.
No, the only survey that is distributed to all scholars is our sort of school culture survey, surveys about how the teachers are doing. There's nothing regarding them identifying themselves, or we would never go in that direction.
Yes.
I think it would be more in response to something that happens rather than a preemptive collection or trying to identify things.
Right.
And in our world, you can never quite know what might happen on any given day.
Also, as a school leader, you often don't need to give a survey to know those who have the behavioral concerns.
Yeah.
They show themselves.
Anything passed by the state, perhaps the state legislation requirement, I just was wondering, are they move in that direction, acquiring that as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
They are moving in that
direction. All right, do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the board policy on referral protocols for addressing scholar behavioral health concerns.
I will second. And a motion to second, all in favor?
Aye.
I carry 4-0. Next is discussion and approval of school accountability report card, SARC.
This was the presentation we given by Bree Gordon. She's at our Oakland campus right now.
Oh, good evening. Our school accountability report card is an annual report that we do every year, reporting out data from the previous school year on various demographics, academics, teaching and support staff information, and then funding and resources available. So the reports that you have are for each of our three in-person campuses for last school year. I think some important things to note is if it talks about the district, it's actually talking about our authorizing districts, not us as John Adams Academy. And then the only edits since the versions that you have are in relation to our support staff. There were some changes to the way we categorized our librarians in there. So the official document will be updated with those numbers. Did you have any questions?
Thank you for doing this, Bree. These are really important things because we need to make sure we keep our information accurate and that we keep those that have authority over us content with, you know, checking the boxes. And I don't mean that, you know, in a small way. It's a big deal what you put together and the importance of it. So thank you for doing that and for paying attention to those details. Any questions for the board? Great. Do I have a motion?
We'll make a motion to approve the 25-26 school accountability report card.
Okay. Okay, a motion and second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
That carried 4-0. Next is the approval, discussion approval of scholar athlete handbook.
Yes. We collaboratively with the high school, secondary school principals, assistant principals, some people that were also administrators and coaches. We shared this information out, and to the best of anyone's knowledge, part of this handbook had not come before the board, and it is a requirement of the CIF that it does. And I'll get to that in just a second. So we got a lot of input. We created some clarity and some unifying of language to make sure it matched current standards, so on and so forth. We also have some ideas. Everything that's in this handbook related to the CIF is in compliance. I've had two pretty lengthy conversations. I have a long background in another state in athletics, but California does it differently. And when you've done something for a long time, I didn't really trust myself to read it and understand it. So I wanted to take time. And so I feel good and the group feels good that what we have in the handbook is appropriate. The piece that has to be approved by the board, if you go to page 8 or the second to last page, has to do with the academic eligibility piece that all of our campus adhere to. The thing that is much different than in my past is we have the latitude at each campus to determine the time frame that we choose to check academic eligibility, in other words, to do grade checks. And the Lincoln Roseville campus has utilized a 2-week period to do grade checks. And the EDH campus is still trying to decide for sure how to break it down, but more than likely a quarter grade check with an interim grade check halfway through the quarter. So the second piece of that is in California, we're allowed with the board's approval to have a probationary period. What that means is if I'm playing boys basketball and we're using basically an 8-week grade check period, if I get to the end of the first 8-week grade check and I am ineligible, I don't have all my grades C minus or better. If we allow a probationary period, then I have the next 8 weeks to get my grades right without losing the ability to participate. We still then have a semester grade check, which will determine whether I would be able to participate in the second semester. When you go to a 2-week period, then it's done in a 2-week increment. And so if I'm ineligible at 2 weeks, I have 2 weeks to get right, and I get one chance per season. If I use up my chance and it happens again, then I'm going to lose my ability to participate. So that's what the probationary period does, and that's the part that the CIF requires the board to approve so that we can actually do that. And to, again, to the best of everyone's knowledge, we haven't done that in the past. So we wanted to make sure that we have brought it forward to all of you and answer any questions and hopefully get your approval as we would like to utilize the probationary period.
I didn't see those time periods expressed in the document.
They're not. And so what it says in the document is that each site will determine their specifics because we have some different philosophies and ideas, and I think either is sound. And so our recommendation is that we do allow campuses to determine those time periods and apply the rules accordingly. And the good thing is, at the end of the year, you can say, yeah, we didn't really like what we set up this year, we can change it. And that's something very different than what I'm used to. There were three options. You picked one and you went with it. Here, there's a lot more flexibility, which I think can be good and maybe not so good. But nonetheless, that's why we don't have the specific items delineated to each campus in this document.
How long, how many weeks is a typical sport playing their games?
Yeah, it really varies by sport and number of contests. So things like cross country, individual sports generally have a shorter season and a closer period of time, where team sports, you have a lot more contests. Number of weeks, I haven't actually counted them, so I'd be guessing to throw that number out. Zeta or any of our high school folks, do you have a sense of that?
From a soccer season standpoint, soccer starts in August and is completed by November.
Okay.
Basketball starts in
November.
And then February.
Yeah, so I guess what I'm asking is, if we have someone that's counting every 2 weeks, it seems like they're going to have accountability, right? Because you're going to make sure that you're well within that time period. If you have 8 weeks and then you have a probation of 8 weeks, you could blow through the whole period and say, well, I guess I got under the fence on that one, didn't I? And so that's what I'm asking about. I'm trying to say, how does this work in terms of reality?
Yeah.
Am I taking it too far, or is that accurate?
No, I think that's accurate.
Okay.
Just to look at it a different way, to only be out 2 weeks is not that big a deal, but to be out for half the season is a much bigger deal. And so the kids look at it that way too. It's just a different way of looking. That's why I
would. Yeah, I don't understand what you're saying. Help me, keep coming. Say it again.
Well, if the kid doesn't make the grade, if you're on the 2 week schedule, you can be playing 2 weeks. But if you don't, if you're on the longer, you're out for half the season. So you take that grade check very seriously. And the kids know it's coming. And then the other side of it is the teacher side and making sure those grades are up to date. Is difficult every 2 weeks. So you don't always get accurate information. And so the athletic director is constantly making exceptions because of the teacher, not because of the kid. So for us, we have official grading periods at the quarter mark. And so our teachers take it very seriously. They have to get their grades up to date and accurate.
So how is that better account? Increase accountability, I guess, for the master.
Well, it's accountability for the teachers and also the sports.
The other thing that's true is by you approving a probationary period doesn't mean a campus has to use it. You could say, we aren't going to utilize it as a campus. And so just what Zeta is saying, at the end of that 8 weeks, you're going to miss 8 weeks if you don't choose. But we have to get your stamp of approval to be able to offer it, if that helps to clarify it a little bit.
Okay, so help me because I'm still a little bit vague. The season starts in August and it ends in October. When does the grade check happen?
It happens at tryouts. So in the August. First grade check is this, yeah.
In August or September.
Yeah, so they don't even start.
So they may not even August. Have any grades really to report this.
Well, no, you look at the last grading period. So whoever they did the last semester, that's the first check. They can't play if they failed any courses the previous semester.
If they failed a class, in May, if they were failing in May, they can't start the season in August.
So correct. Unless they took summer school or credit recovery to address their deficiency. And so this is one of the nuances of this. In the 2-week grade check, if I, by the rule, after 2 weeks of the new semester, if I do nothing and I didn't pass at the end of the year, conceivably I'm can immediately earn my eligibility with a 2-week penalty, even though I didn't take care of business the whole previous semester. Whereas doing it by a quarter grade, if I didn't pass at the end of the year and I go to try out for soccer at the beginning of next year, I can go out and I can be part of the team, but I couldn't participate in a contest until that 8-week grade check period happens.
So the 8-week grade check happens at the beginning of each sport as it begins. Is that what I heard you to say?
Well, for us, it would be 8 weeks. It would be more like 4.5. Because we were looking, because we do quarter grades, which is roughly every 9 weeks. And then we would do it halfway between there too. So it's roughly about 4 to 5 weeks with the different checks.
Okay. So what you're saying is if something started in August and the quarter would then end in 9 weeks later, so let's say that's probably mid to late October.
Yeah, not October.
And that would be the quarter, but you'd be doing something at 4.5 weeks, which would be roughly mid-September or late September.
Mid-September, yeah, third week of September.
Okay. And they didn't pass at 4.5 weeks, so what happens to them?
Well, it depends if you approve the probationary period or not. But they would be either on probation or they can't play for the remainder of the, for the next, until the quarter race.
So how will it work, I guess? Is it going to be one or the other?
Well, it depends on what you guys approve. If there's a probationary period, not. If there's a probationary period, they can play. But if they don't need it at the end of that, hopefully for us, it would be the rest of the year. I think having a chance every season is too much, personally. I mean, I just think that's too more seriously. The other thing is grades don't really get ramped up in the first month because they're just right. Starting. So every little assignment, you know, your grades are. It's just you're either got an A or you're failing because you missed one. Like there's just not enough assignments. So the first 2 weeks of the semester, you're not getting an accurate grade either.
So what we're saying is that if I have someone that is new to the school now, let's suppose that I'm a freshman and I come from Timbuktu school, and how do I get a grade check?
So yeah, great question, because this is another thing that's different. In California, you can use your eighth grade, end of year grades to determine your eligibility as a freshman. You can. You don't have to, but you can. And our general belief across our organization is that we would prefer not to do that, to give a freshman a clean slate starting high school, but that's something that can be done.
So
the other thing to point out that came up that was interesting but may be important to know: if someone transfers from another school and they weren't eligible, the eligibility sequence or period for grade checks that they use applies to them regaining eligibility at their new school, which was very interesting. But that is the rule. So I come from school A, and they use semesters. That would be what would apply to me in getting back into athletics at my new school, even if that's not their policy. That's quite interesting.
How are we going to know that?
Huh?
How are we going to know?
Oh, there's a whole process of transfers. It's a big deal.
It's in the records?
It is. There's a transfers is the scourge of athletics. Just like if you are paying attention to NIL, there are so many hoops and there's a lot of deception and people trying to get things that aren't real. So there's a very detailed system put in place to try to minimize somebody getting something they shouldn't.
So if we approve this, each campus can determine how they want to approach this, but it gives the freedom and flexibility to work with it how they'd like.
Okay. That's correct.
I wish you luck if you apply this principle differently to two different kids in the same grade, because these kids, they talk. So if you have some kid and you know, if you're making them, this turns into any kind of subjective type of decision, right? And you say, well, that kid could play. We'll put them on probation.
Oh,
next kid comes along with the same exact grade. And like, yeah, we're not doing probation. You're out of here.
That's only if it's a transfer student.
I'm saying within our school, you know, within our policy or whatever. You know?
Oh, no.
What would the policy just apply to that particular campus?
Yeah.
So it's not as
but they're coming up with this policy, right? You're going to decide yourself what you want.
Right, but I think that the point is that they're going to come up with a policy that they're going to apply to their campus. And so it's not as if student A and student B are going to have a different set of standards. It's the same standard, same campus.
So you're going to take our general principle and you're going to have more subjective you're going to have more stated policy on
it. as you're alluding to, the criteria needs to be very clear and very understandable. Yeah. Otherwise, you put yourself in a real mess that you don't want to put yourself in.
I think that's maybe some of our initial reactions, wondering that you're just going to handle that. We're going to approve this, and you're going to handle. You're going to take care of the particulars on a campus level.
The campuses, with the way this is written, do have the ability to apply a system they believe is in the best interest of their scholars.
Right.
So let me see if I got this straight. No, because the devil's in the detail,
yeah,
right?
I agree.
Oh, okay, so how's this work? So what I heard said, and of course this is being recorded, that way I don't have to say, well, I thought you said it. No, you didn't say that to me. Okay, so a sport starts, you pull eligibility on grades for a new sport starting. In El Dorado's case, 4.5 weeks later, they pull grades. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. They're not meeting the standard. What happens?
Well, if you approve the probation, they're put on probation. If you don't approve the probationary period, they will be out.
Okay.
For the remainder.
So we need to ask ourselves, do we want a probation of 4.5 or no probation of 4.5?
Right.
Okay. What do you recommend and why?
You saw that coming, right? I would want to do probation, but not every season, like what Allie does. Because I think when it's a longer period, I don't agree with that. I would do one probation a year is all they're allowed.
That's allowable.
Yeah, but because she has a shorter 2-week probation, they're allowed to have, what is it, one probationary period every season? So they could technically have 3 probationary periods for the year, where I would only allow one the entire year.
For sports combined, we got a really good athlete.
Multiple sports.
Then. Okay.
You don't get another probationary period for the rest of the
season. You get one probation.
Yeah. You get one grace, and that's it.
For example, there's a local high school that you get to in your high school career, you pick. Which, all of this is fascinating to me. Because it's, you know, you teach an old dog new tricks. These have been new tricks for me. Because it's so different.
I also want to point out that because we have the 70% mark, that is very, that's a very high bar. It's just a 2.0 GPA for most everybody else. So because we have such a high bar, I think we need that grace. And it's very easy to slip and get a D just because, you know, you missed one paper or just something like that. So I want to give them that grace period.
Okay. Rosefield.
So we do ours every 2 weeks. Like Peter was saying, that way, say the season starts, I'm eligible, I'm playing, I get busy, I just start skipping my assignments, and now I'm failing a class or two, grade check comes. If we're able to do probation, then I can continue to play for another 2 weeks while I work real hard to get my grades up so that I can play the rest of the season. We like the 2 week window because that gives that push for, if I don't get my grades up, I'm gonna miss the end of this season. Our concern is if we make ours longer, then I'm worried that they're like, I as a scholar don't have the incentive to because I'll be on probation through the rest of the season anyway. I don't just feel like we're playing. But I don't know, that could also be addressed with you get one a year and you're done.
I thought they only get probation for 2 weeks and they can play again. But no, if you check again in another 2 weeks.
Well, we check again in 2 weeks. If you're still failing, you're done.
Yeah.
For the whole season, or you give them a chance
for the season?
For the season.
For the season. So say I'm playing soccer. And at the beginning of the season, I'm eligible. Couple weeks in, grade check, and I'm failing classes. If we are able to do probation, I'd be on probation for the next 2 weeks. If I'm still failing after those 2 weeks, my probation's over and I'm off the team for the rest of the season. If my grades are up, I met the requirements of my probation, and I'm on the team and not on probation anymore.
But you'll check again on another
team. Oh, yeah. So we check again 2 weeks after that, all year long. If you're on a team every 2 weeks, we're pulling your grades.
Is this a burden to the teachers to have those?
So I've been in both shoes, right? I've been in the classroom filling out the grade checks, and I've been in the admin office checking them as well. Personally, in the classroom, I think my grades should be up to date every 2 weeks anyway. If I'm falling further and further behind where not having my grades up to date, something else is wrong. I think my grades should be up to date, at least reasonably up to date. And if a kid comes in and says, I failed my grade check, I've got a 2 week probation window, what can I do to pull my grade up? I'm going to be working with them anyway, really, whether they're on a sports team or not, because my goal is to have kids back in my class. So I don't think it adds an extra burden on the teachers.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Ditto. Because we're in the same boat. So we do the same things that they do as far as the structures. Because our team, we're combined together, so our system is the same.
Okay. Other questions by the board?
I'll make a motion to approve the Scholar Athlete Handbook items.
Well, second that.
Okay. You have a motion and a second. Let me just say one thing about this. Please remember, I know you know this already, but one reason we did the school was so that academics come first. Extracurriculars are exactly that.
They're a privilege. Curriculars come first. So if we get to the point where we're allowing the extracurriculars to lead the horse of the curriculars, we're sunk. We've kind of been consumed by the culture around us, which that's what most of them do. They're there for the extracurriculars. And we want to, well, I want to build the complete person. We need to remember the sequence. And that's what this is designed to do. I don't know that I want to get involved in saying one's better than the other, but it's also about accountability of that sequence. And I think from what I've heard, we can teach that accountability with either way. But it's important that we teach that to the scholars. So anyway, thank you for that, because it's important. That's why I want to take a little extra time. And if we need to, see how this is going from time to time, and I think it would be a good idea at the end of this year to have Bob come back and say, here's where we felt that there were weaknesses and here's where it seemed to work well or didn't. We need to be honest with ourselves and with everybody else, and we trust everybody has those same objectives. And, you know, there can be more than one way, but those are the principles. So we're hitting the principles that we're hitting tomorrow.
I can't speak for everyone, but I do believe that that is the spirit that we'll have, and the understanding's pretty clear. But I agree, like everything, we need to evaluate and see. And in this case, the beauty of it, we can make adjustments and have a lot of latitude to make change.
So if you'd bring that back, report to Brandy for June, that would be good.
Absolutely.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That carried 4-0. Thank you.
Thanks for the discussion.
Well,
it is important.
Yeah. Okay, next is approval of new personal finance curriculum.
Shane, are you back there? Personal finance, board approved. The state is requiring personal finance. The board approved that in the graduation requirement. That begins with the class of 2031. Principals can implement earlier, not the graduation requirement, but they can implement the class and work it into the standard schedule. But it's a here you have before a curriculum with the primary texts are Dave Ramsey Education Foundations and Personal Finance, with a couple of classical readings. One is Benjamin Franklin's The Way to Wealth and George Tyson's The Richest Man in Babylon. There's Memoria, some Franklin quotes, and he saves a penny earned. The Way to Wealth is as plain as the way to the market. It depends chiefly on two words, industry and frugality. But there's a few quotes there. There's a lot of supplemental readings. Another Ramsey book, Total Money Makeover. My wife and I read that one years ago and applied that. And anyway, but then there's also several other books as well that teachers can use as a resource. Question. When do we plan to start this?
So just to remind the board, we're teaching personal finance right now in our economics courses. It's about, we teach economics and personal finance, but we give them an economics credit. This really expands our personal finance and gives it a full credit, stands on its own. We haven't added any requirements beyond that all students that graduate by 2031 have to have this on their transcript to graduate.
They graduate when?
By 2031.
Oh, gotcha.
So basically the incoming freshman class would begin. for this requirement.
Gotcha.
But if principals want to be able to start offering this class earlier, starting next year, I mean, they can offer this class.
Actually, I'm going to suggest that we consider that, and I'd like to ask the principals why we wouldn't do that. And the reason I ask that is because one of the primary purposes of the charter, that was my background. That's where I actually did things that were not philanthropic, was I was a financial advisor for years. And I thought I dealt with a lot of professionals, meaning, people that were doctors and lawyers and engineers and architects and so forth. And a lot of them were not really that knowledgeable on finance. And I thought, what a shame to spend, several years, 5 to 10 years at least, in, post college or after your BS or BA to do what you're doing and not know how to take care of your money and save for retirement and be financially independent so that you can be free. And so I can't emphasize how important this is. In fact, I've been reading again, I've been mentoring with some scholars, Benjamin Franklin's autobiography. And in there, he talks about how he got started in his business as a printer. And it's fantastic. And the kids can really relate to it because he was just the way he writes, the way he thinks, and he was from a modest family. And so I would ask this question, why wouldn't we want to implement this now? Is there a reason that we would want to wait?
So, yes. Dean, this is Jesse from online. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, so we're starting the personal finance class this semester. We had great interest from our scholars. 36 have signed up. It's an elective course at this point. And when we put that out there, they were very excited. So we're looking forward. We've been giving suggestions on this curriculum with Troy and others. So we're looking forward to be able to give you some feedback at the end of the semester.
Thank you. One of the maybe seven wonders of the world, right? Compound interest. Okay.
So I want to start off by clarifying that we are also excited about the class and wanting to implement it sooner rather than later. The only thing I want to kind of hesitate on is I would like it to not be a mandate that it starts next year, because I haven't had a chance to really dig into staffing and classroom space to make it a standalone class. So that's our goal and our intention, but we are working with some constraints that we're going to make some workarounds for. And if it's this needs to be in place next school year, our hope is to be able to do that, but
that's okay. We'll relegate those people to stay in the poorhouse the rest of their life.
I'm just kidding. Okay, but you see what I'm saying? When we talk about these things and we say, well, let's wait till then, I'm thinking, dude, they're only with us 4 years. And this is really important. And I know that you're one of the people that has probably modeled this in your own life and the way you do things. And so I understand what you're saying, but I'm saying this is important enough that I think it deserves a fair hearing to say this is more important, I would even say, than many of the other required courses we have, because this will impact them and the freedom they enjoy and the quality of life they enjoy for their whole life. It's a big deal. So I hear what you're saying. You're saying I just want to have the space, and I'm concerned about doing this right away because of that.
Because we have it, it's personal finance is in our economics class already because it's so important. And our goal is to be able to create the space to have a class that is solely dedicated to personal finance. I'm concerned that if we say we're going to create an entirely separate class right this moment, I don't want us to not do it right. And I also want to make sure that we're able to do it rather than trying to shoehorn something in that.
Well, did I hear you right, though? Didn't you just say that you're putting it in there now, but it's just not a standalone class?
Yes. So it's part of our economics class.
Right.
But unless I'm misunderstanding, eventually for the incoming class, the incoming freshman class, it will need to be its own standalone class in addition to the economics class.
Yeah.
Which will necessitate some adjustments to the schedule. You'll have another class in their schedule during the year. You'll need a separate classroom. You'll need a teacher who will be teaching that and can't be teaching economics at the same time, which is our goal. We want to do that. And my hope is to be able to pull that off for this next year. But I haven't had a chance to look at it.
If I can interject, just because when we gave you the personal finance requirement, we said either in person or independent study. I don't know what all the campuses are doing. I met with one economics teacher last year. They were doing the Ramsey book every Friday for the entire year. They were getting through the entire Ramsey text here while teaching economics and government. So they're getting the full course. Again, I don't know how all the teachers are doing it. You could technically have them, because Ramsey has an online program where you go through modules and answer questions, and that's what they were doing. You could actually still just have them do an independent study and then have class time through the year. Anyway, or standalone class, which they would get and be able to do more than just the Ramsey, you know. I will say this, our policy says to require it, the board has to approve it. We can't require it until for anyone that's currently in high school has to start with the freshman, but we can offer the course as an elective.
Once this happens, what grade would you teach this in?
What would you guys say? Probably 10 or 11, I guess.
They don't have space in their schedule. 10th and 11th grade.
Say 11 or 12?
Yeah, for us, it would most likely be seniors. But it is the most popular part of the econ class, so you'll get a lot of kids will sign up for it. They'll love it. So we definitely want to start it as soon as possible, but it'll have to be an elective until it's mandatory. But yeah, we hope to start it next year.
Until it's mandatory from the state mandatory?
Yeah, it's not a graduation requirement.
I'm surprised the state wants to make personal finance mandatory. They'd be able to figure out their personal finance. If they figure out their personal finance, they might wake up and start asking about the state finance.
They may see they need the help.
Did you want to say anything?
Me?
Yeah.
From our
saving.
From the Lincoln campus side of the coin, it does measure into the same thing on the economic side of the structure, but also coming from a financial background and lines and corridors, it is important. And it is the most popular discussions. We've even had it brought down in some games that were played with eighth graders this year from one of our humanities teachers, and the discussions that came to my office about how to evaluate stocks and investments off the books between classes and between periods was incredible. So this would be highly needed, but the game comes into how do we freestand a class eventually as we go in space. But it is definitely, it needs to be done.
Okay. Well, sorry, I wanted to take that quick detour just because of how important it is. It's either math, work, money at work, or charity. That's how we get to someday be financially independent. And trust me, the third one of charity is not the way we want people to go. And I hope they do work their, you know, but what they want to work at their whole lives. And that they have money at work making lots of other little monies so that they're free, you know, they're truly free. So thank you. And please, I would like to kind of have the board consider adding a biography of Benjamin Franklin because of its power to teach how a young man and a budding entrepreneur found a way to, you know, make a living. And it's an amazing story. It's, I think it's chapter 6 in this book. It's not very long. It's about 10 pages, 12 pages, but highly recommend it.
Did you say have that as a supplemental reading to this list or requirement?
Yeah. So do I have a motion?
I'll make the motion to approve the new personal finance curriculum. Second. With the addition of the supplemental the autobiography of Benjamin. Second that also.
A motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. That carried 4-0. Last item is the discussion on approval of ACE programming. We have a couple speakers for that too. So after, how do you, we want to sequence this? Were you going to speak to it first, and then we'll have the others come up?
So what my role in presenting this boils down to introducing probably one of the most well-prepared and organized scholars I've worked with, Dean Collier.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dean Collier. I'm a junior here at Roseville, and I've been at the Academy since kindergarten. I love the classical education I've received here, while also being deeply interested in math and science. I'm requesting approval for the ACE Enrichment Program, designed to give high schoolers interested in architecture, construction, and engineering opportunities to explore these fields as future career paths. My vision for the program includes bringing in professional guest speakers, touring local job sites and facilities, working on hands-on projects, and more. We plan to offer a baseline of 3 such activities per semester. I've been envisioning and planning this program for over 2 years now. I'm thrilled to have Mr. George working alongside me as our faculty advisor. He's my current honors physics teacher and Montreal coach, and an amazing member of the John Adams staff team. I'm also very excited to have Rick Sowers here. He is a retired professional civil engineer and also my grandpa. As well as I'd like to give a shout out to my good friend Logan over here, who has also come in support of the ACE program. And then also Mr. Christian, an amazing member of our admin team, who's also representing the program. And then others who came as well, thank you. And I believe this program aligns with our Academy's mission by fostering creativity, entrepreneurial spirit, scholar-empowered learning, and the culture of greatness. I'm ready and excited to launch this program. Thank you so much for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Any questions?
Dean, is there a way for you to model this for the other 2 campuses? It just seems excellent, a great opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, if they're interested in it, that's something that I'm definitely also interested in exploring, is expanding to the other campuses.
Great, Logan Sorensen. Thank you again.
All right, so I just wanted to say a few things. Back at Dean's point, he's one of the most capable scholars I've met or known. I've been in kindergarten and for a long time. I know he has the skills to succeed this program wonderfully. I've also known Mr. George for a while, and I know the 2 of them together will be the perfect blend that this program needs, and I know that they can accomplish the program really well and have and be and have the whole program be as great as it possibly can. This is something that I've been interested in as well. I've been learning all this math and science, things like that. I've been learning geometry, Euclidean geometry, and all these things. But what really strikes me about this program is the idea that we can apply those skills we're learning in math and science. We have a real foundation for our application. And in my education, I think application or the thing skills and learning is one of the most important concepts. And when a program like this enables you to apply those skills you're learning through math, in math and science through this ACE program, I feel like that's really a good use of your skills.
Good. Thank you. Well said. All right, thank you for taking the initiative to do that. Any questions from the board?
Well, I'm curious, do you already have people from the community, like from the construction industry or whatnot, ready to go in terms of, you know, speaking and touring?
I do have several connections already, and I've created a pretty comprehensive activities list of possible places to tour as well. And my grandpa has a lot of connections in the realm of engineering, and I've already talked to a few people who would definitely be willing to come in as guest speakers.
Good. I have a friend who is the president of a construction company, so maybe I can get you as well.
That's awesome. Yeah,
probably have a lot of great insight for you.
That'd be incredible.
Yeah.
I'd love to talk to you more about that.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Do I have a motion?
I'll make the motion to approve the ACE program at the Roosevelt campus.
I'll second.
I'll second.
All right. Thank you. Have a motion and a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
That carried 4-0. Thank you. Next is board initiated business. One thing I wanted to mention, Nathan, would you stand up, please? He's our class president from Lincoln, and I want to welcome him here today. I probably should have asked you about all the discussion we had on sports and eligibility, but I'm grateful he's here. He's one of those that helps all of the others look good. He's quite a scholar and an athlete, and I want to thank him for being here. And is there anything that you wanted to mention while you're here as our scholar representative?
I've just been on behalf of our scholar government to kind of showcase what we've done this year just for our school. Going into it, I haven't been in scholar government, but going into it this year, I wanted to improve specifically our culture in general. There was a lot looking into it on our rallies and dances specifically. For our rallies, they thought, oh, there's like a lot of repetitive games. And so I put in like poll systems for scholars throughout all of secondary. And so they would fill out polls for the rally games, what games they'd want to see. And so that just gets the excitement going, get people more involved in the games. And they're actually seeing games that they want to see played, or things like talent shows, things like Staff versus Scholar. Things like that that can be implemented that people want to see. For our dances, we wanted to improve our dances a lot because it's kind of been a notorious thing, at least around our school culture, that goes around that our dances are just really bad. It's a repetitive songs and it's the same playlist over again, and there's like no food, it just sucks. And so we're going into this and we're like, okay, how can we improve our dances? And so the first thing that we implemented, we got a DJ, which we haven't seen in at least like 3 years. And so we got a DJ in for our dance, and we put in a lot of effort, a lot of planning. And the main thing was getting just a lot of planning beforehand so that we can advertise it, because we felt that a lot of the dances before just didn't have any advertisement. And so going into it, we're planning at least 2 months before so that a month leading into the dance, we can already have posters advertised. And we even shot a video. We had like a Hollywood themed dance in the fall, and we shot a video of all of us dressing up like we're Hollywood people and we're walking a red carpet. And so we're shooting fun videos like that to get them involved. And our dance had the most people that the school has ever seen in Lincoln, with well over 100 people attending the dance for high school. And middle school was just through the roof with numbers. There was like a lot of kids. And so like going into our dance on the 30th, we're like, okay, we need more people to supervise the middle school social network. There's too many. And so, yeah, that was great to see. And it was great to hear all the feedback and that people were actually liking the dances and were wanting to attend. And service projects wise, it's been a thing for our choir that we're going to Disneyland this year for our Lincoln Choir for the first time. And so they were fundraising for the school year, just 1 year. Usually it's a 2 year thing. So we wanted to make it an important part of our part to try and fundraise for them. And so we put out a fundraiser called Ignite the Arts. And for 1 to 2 weeks, Scholar Government went out into three groups. And we had posters and flyers that we walked around to businesses expressing what our choir does as a program and kind of going around to businesses, specifically in Lincoln, some went to Rockland, some went to Roseville, but talking about our Lincoln program and our choir program and how we're going to Disneyland and for them to fundraise. And a lot of them were really nice about it and were very willing to donate. So that was great to see. And we were actually able to fundraise a lot of money that we were able to charter a bus instead of having bands to go and have parents drive down to Disneyland. So that was great to see. And then one final thing, as far as seniors, we want to do something special. It's a little late in the year, but finally, after like people actually turned in their ideas, we have senior parking spots coming soon, hopefully within the next 2 weeks. And that'll just be great to see for our seniors. It's a small class. There's only like 14 of us. And out of those 14, 9 of them submitted ideas for their senior parking spots. So we're going to get that going in the next 2 weeks, hopefully. But yeah, that's just kind of what we've done as a Scholar Government.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your efforts to make a difference as it's happening.
Thank you.
It's been my pleasure to be with these seniors over there weekly as they elected that they wanted to read the Screwtape letters by C.S. Lewis, and it's been wonderful and really a blessing to them and to me too. Well, thank you, Nathan, for being here tonight. Any board-initiated business, there is one item on here, the Revolution Run. Kimberly, if you want to say something about that, I know that we've been advertising it a little bit. And
yes, we finally were able to have some interest from our parents who are post after our community. So I have four prospective interviews that I'll be conducting next week, and hopefully you can find at least one. Maybe two, maybe four. I don't know. But I do think that there's promise there since we hope to Revolution Run alive and moving forward as one of our biggest community and by those events.
And it's tentatively scheduled for
April 11th.
So you put that on your calendar if you would. Any other board announcements we may should want to get out? All right, well, thank you. Thank everybody for being here. With that, the next board meeting will be on February 26th at 4 p.m. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make the motion to adjourn. Second that motion.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.